Game of Two Halves brings you
The Next City.
And welcome back to Phoenix City, both to you, the listeners, I say plural listeners, and also Ella, Cam, Dave. Hello.
Hey.
Merry New Year.
Yeah, New Year. More points in the bank. Interesting. So we were all there, I assume. I didn't see you, Ella, but
I watched it on TV.
Okay.
Were you still away for Christmas?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm still gone, but now I'm back.
Was it Waiheke Island, was it?
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to miss a game, Waiheke Island's a pretty nice place to miss it for, to be fair.
Yeah, couldn't really complain, apart from the weather not quite being...
I mean, I was in Whangatāra and I flew back just for the game. So.
Really?
I could have come back on Sunday. I was like, you know what, if I'm booking flights, I'll come back on Saturday so I can make the football.
Okay. Hello, we need to query your dedication, yeah, exactly. To be honest. Yep.
Duly noted, guys.
Wow, you're still on your probation period too, so...
Surely I've done for 90 days by now.
Mm. Yeah, that's only for...
Paid employment.
Yeah, paid. Intern, and we went permanent probation. Cam's still on probation, I think.
I am never getting out of probation.
Oh, so we probably should talk about the game. Obviously, we're trying to deflect because it
was... we talk about the first 45.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can definitely talk... Let's talk about the first 45.
Let's do cliche bingo.
I was actually going to do this and write down a cliche I was going to absolutely flip my wig on if someone said, and I will flip my wig.
Can I ask one question then? Was it a game of two halves?
No, that wasn't okay. It.
Oh, really? Oh, that was the one I was going for.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We should have all just put in our cliche, but yes, game of two halves. Was it really? Because that last 5 minutes, as soon as that, should we start at the beginning? Because otherwise we're just going to go down a pit.
A very black dark hole. Yep.
So it was a good start. Got on top nice and early. Got forward. Noticed Mr. Payne getting forward quite early, which is, I assume he's been directed that way because it's not his natural game.
I think now that he's kind of got the basics a bit more under control, because it's obviously a role he's not particularly used to. he's proven himself more than useful, but he knows the defensive side well. And I think early on there, when he'd come in as cover, it makes sense to go just stick to what you know, be solid at the back. And if the opportunity arises to get forward, do, but be solid defensively. And I think now that that's a bit more bedded in, they're probably going, cool, now that you're used to that, let's get you doing a bit more as well. So it makes sense to me that that's starting to come in.
Yeah, well, certainly that actually did come to fruition, that very early run that he made. I can't remember whether it was the first or second goal, the 16 pass.
Mm. Yeah, the first one.
It was the first one.
Word on him is he's actually deceptively quick as well. Would be top five in the squad for speed across distance. So
yeah, I think
that's pretty good.
I think his third and fourth gear is pretty decent, but his first two are not rapid.
Slow off the mark, but... if he's going literally 80 metres, then that's good.
Yeah, that's fair. It was a nice little, apparently 16 passes, but I think basically it all started from that Matty Steinman pass from the back, which was beautiful, hooking up with Ball, who managed to realise he was unmarked, turn and almost got himself tangled up, but managed to slip a beautiful ball to Tim Payne, making a massive run up the right.
Yep.
And then beautiful square ball. Fox in the box, Hooper doing exactly what you would pay him the big money for, to do fuck all and stick his boot in the way of it.
he almost messed it up, to be honest.
I mean, kind of.
Doing it, so easy to do.
Yeah.
Like, you're expected to score. And
He does score. That's what really matters here. But a striker of his quality, it makes me worry slightly that he still gives the keeper such a chance at this.
Well, I thought the keeper did really well. I mean, he was coming from the middle of the box. Yep. He made a big, big dive and got...
solid
piece of hand. Yeah. But Hooper hit it well enough that it went in. I think that's kind of the difference. Even when you're out of form, for a guy of quality to doesn't matter. I'm still getting this. Great pass by Steinman. Just as good a pass and brilliant vision from David Ball to see Payne from behind him. Payne to see the space, make the run, even though it was a long way off, and put in a good little cross. Hooper to finish. Four pieces of quality team play. Nothing spectacular, but...
Well, you say it was 16 passes. Apparently it touched every player. I thought it started with what I thought was De Vere making a horrendous error and keeping the ball in and giving himself under all sorts of pressure, but manages to get the pass away and, you know, just builds from there. So everybody involved, great retention of possession, great ability to find space and move into it and use it effectively. So it was a really good goal, really good goal.
Yeah, there was basically those four players that managed to, between them, I think maybe five or six passes, round them to get De Vere out of trouble.
Yeah.
Just nice little short triangles. I'm not going to say Barcelona-esque. There was a hint of desperation about all of those passes. But they stuck to their guns. They didn't just hoof it and kept the possession, and that's what happened. It was so very, very nice. And obviously it was a good period of possession and control and attacking, and we saw – David Ball pop up and surprise the shit out of himself. That little slope in, basically the Davila cliche, inside once, inside twice, curl with your left. Davila tried to give it the flick between his legs but missed.
Has that been given back to Ball yet?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it was always Ball, wasn't it?
No.
No, so the referees gave that to Davila.
No, he didn't touch it.
Because they thought on the night, they thought that he got the final touch, which is fair enough because it goes between his legs and he's trying to play it.
Oh,
so you can understand.
He's trying to.
It went to the, don't want to call it the dubious goals committee because that's what they have in the EPL, to work out who actually scored a goal when it's, you know, up in question.
I mean, it takes all of 2 seconds to have a look at it and go, well, obviously doesn't touch it.
But it still has to go to the right people to make that decision. So I'm glad it's been given back to him because it was a beautiful finish.
It was. But did you see the surprise on his face when he's hit it with his bad foot, curled it well with his bad foot, and it's got on, and he's just looked, and the amount of shots that he hasn't gotten on target or in the right spot, and he was stunned that it came off. And he kind of stood there and then went, and wheeled off. It was nice to see him getting in, you know, assisting a goal very early doors and proving that he's actually pretty pivotal to this team. I think obviously that came through in the second half.
Before we move on to that, my favourite moment of that Ball goal is, you alluded to it, Ulysses tries to get a touch. He turns around and sees that he knows he obviously didn't get the touch. He turns around and looks and sees that it's gone in, but still does like a frustrated hand clap and is annoyed at himself because he wanted that goal. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's my favourite part of the whole thing. Rather than celebrating with the team, he's annoyed it wasn't his, which makes it even more funny that the referees did put it down as his because, he really wanted it.
That was the thing. I was wondering what the referees were looking at because clearly they didn't see anything on the screen. Clearly didn't see De Vere's reaction.
Yeah.
Like, how are you then drawing the conclusion that it was De Vere's goal?
I don't know. Maybe they thought it was a clap of celebration, but you watch everything about his reaction. He's frustrated. Yeah. He's like, how did I not get a touch on that? Yeah. That should be my goal. And he's grumpy about it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that would have been a very, very sick goal if that had, it was sick regardless, but.
Ball would have been gutted.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that is fair. I don't know whether it was frustration of not getting the goal so much as I was trying to do this and it didn't come.
Oh, I don't know. I think he strikes me as the sort of guy who likes that he's banging in quite a few and is enjoying, a golden boot run. He's quite liking that. And so one that he knew he could have essentially poached on the line and tried to, he's still going to get grief from his teammates for trying to poach it. And he didn't get the reward for having done so.
I've got no problem with someone standing in that position and trying that little flick. If I was shooting in some, because basically if he gets a boot on it, the keeper's got no chance.
But a striking group, 100%. If you poach someone's goal like that, they're definitely going to give you grief. Yeah. It's going to be friendly banter for sure. Yeah. But, he's going to get that, and he didn't get the goal out of it either. So, it is. It's just one of those things, but it was definitely my favourite part of that. Everyone else is wheeling away to celebrate, and De Villa's in a hole of frustration.
What I did note was that basically all the team, bar obviously De Villa, came from a long way to give Ball a big jump on and a big hug. He seems to have endeared himself a fair bit in there, which is good to see because his efforts are paramount to this team.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal. He's The partnership that him and Early have got together is actually staggering. Like, obviously, they are different types of players, but they really seem to complement each other well. They both can go on nice little mazy runs as well, but they're just brilliant.
Right, I'm going to come back to that point in a couple of seconds. Let's just tie over the Phoenix thing of all Phoenix things. an own goal, an uncontested own goal at the
It was contested.
It was contested by two Phoenix players.
There was a jumper in front of De Vere, so De Vere doesn't see the ball. Obviously, it skims off his head, and Mirovic has no chance at all of getting that. So, I would say it's not really uncontested at all. I'd say just De Vere is unsighted and he gets a bit unlucky.
No, I don't think he was unsighted. From the angle we saw that player, you saw two yellow jerseys go up, and if he was unsighted, it was because I think it was Taylor in front of him.
I'll tell you 100%. There was a Mariners player in front of him who jumped for the ball.
A Mariner and then De Vere at the back.
Mm.
Yeah. And it just goes over the top of Hooper and the Mariner, and De Vere gets the lightest touch.
So I'll tell you that because I was standing in line with it, the other side. So there was definitely a Mariners player in his way.
Okay. It still was garbage.
It wasn't great. I'll give you that.
It was definitely suboptimal.
Yeah. Suboptimal.
I mean, anytime the ball goes in your own net, that's the case. I think the Phoenix would feel a bit aggrieved about the fact that just before that, they tried to put the ball out and the Mariners keep it in. And then we end up having a player off injured for this set piece because the ball didn't go out there. And that's why, I don't know if you were at the game, I don't know if it was on TV, but a few of the Phoenix staff are pretty fired up going off at halftime, and Sean Gill, friend of the podcast, was maybe looking to punch on with a couple of the staff. He was pretty furious about it because the Phoenix literally try and put it out. They look at the injured player, they soft pass towards the sideline, and a Mariner swoops in and keeps it in.
Yeah.
And then it ends in this free kick, which goes in as an oggy. So, I mean, you have no complaint there in reality about it, but I can see why the players and staff would feel aggrieved about how that played out.
It's a sportsmanship aggrievement rather than an actual rule.
Exactly.
Well, I don't even know if it's that because I don't know necessarily that Mariners player has realized that someone's
possibly
down.
but the second he keeps it in, a lot of the Phoenix players and the bench are screaming, "We were putting it out, we were putting it out," and the Mariners at that point choose to keep playing on and win this free kick.
I mean, I'm saying that
if you didn't realize, and then you go, "Oh shit, is that what was happening?" You have the moment where you can go, "Oh, okay, we'll put it out then," and you know, I think a lot of teams would do that with an injured player down. They chose not to. It fired up the staff. As you say, it's not a rule thing. You don't have to do that. You can choose to do that. But I think most teams, particularly in the A-League, when teams are putting it out, usually we'll put it out and we'll throw it back.
You know, still 45 minutes. Over 45 minutes, an hour to go, or 50 minutes at least to go. You don't keep it in at that point. You keep it in the 90th minute when you're a goal behind and they're trying to do that. If you keep it in then, fine, people will let that go.
Yeah, to be honest, I think the time of that degree of sportsmanship is...
It happens every week in the A-League. Players put it out.
It happens every week in every league I watch.
So I don't know that the time of it's gone. I think the Mariners are just under that much pressure that's the position they're in. I think it's that simple. I think they made a decision there and it ended up paying off for them in terms of an own goal. But yeah, the Phoenix, A, felt pissed off about that to begin with, and B, they're a man down defending this free kick because it's that injured player who's had to go off the field who would have, if it had gone out when they tried to put it out, and there's a solid argument for if you're putting it out, bloody put it out.
Well, I was going to say, if you're going to put it out, just boot it out. Don't run the risk of something like that.
It would have been a player off for a throw-in and then probably coming back on in time for whatever happened after that, rather than it ends up turning it over to the Mariners, they get a free kick and they score a goal from it.
Yeah. We should probably give the Mariners, the Knicks defense a bit of credit. They actually had 40 pretty good minutes, kept the Mariners basically outside the box. Mariners
did when they hit the bar twice.
Well, yeah, I was coming to that. Two very good shots from outside, and you know, bar a coat of paint.
I think it's where the Phoenix can't have too much complaint about that oggy in reality, because those other ones, they probably deserved at least one of those to go in. I mean, they were spectacular shots, so I don't think the defense did much wrong, but if the Mariners had put one of those in, you would have had no complaints at all. Instead, they end up getting what is by far their worst chance of the whole half, and that's the one they get, but that's football.
Actually, to be fair, I thought that first half was just really well contested between two fairly evenly matched teams, and it certainly felt that the Mariners were putting in a good away performance, and we were playing some good football too.
I thought they were contesting, but I don't think they're the same quality.
I think it was two very different styles. We were keeping a lot of possession and we were dominating the game a lot, but they were playing a counter-attacking game pretty much perfectly.
As you'd expect an away side to do, sitting towards the bottom of the table. They did what they wanted to do well, and we can't argue that they deserve that, at least the goal, or perhaps more from that first half.
No, I got to take issue with that because I thought...
And you are welcome to.
I thought defensively we were very strong. We kept... I mean, counter-attacking teams are looking to get in behind you, and we stopped them doing that. We made them basically play in front of at least four, if not six, of our defenders. They didn't get a chance to basically get in behind our back four, and that's all I can expect from a team that's defending against the counter. I think we did that really well for 44 and a half minutes.
I think in reality, though, even if you're doing all that well, that doesn't mean you don't deserve to concede. And I think two shots, it wasn't because good build-up play or anything like that or a mistake the defense had made, but we deserve to concede at least one of those.
I don't know about that, but the
quality of them were fantastic.
At least one of those shots deserved to go in.
Yeah.
Mm. I would say physics is no.
Yeah, but physics.
Yes. Physics, science, it's not real. So I guess obviously 40 good minutes and whatever I saw on Twitter, someone said whatever team talk Oofy gave in the sheds, he should burn that with fire. Yes, please do. Obviously, Mariners came out very strong. I think we've got to give them credit for that. They really decided that at 2-1, if they put in a good shift early in that second half, and they did, they got amongst it, kicked the bejesus out of David Ball, as they had been doing all game, and Davila copped a little bit as well. They left Mr. Hooper alone, mainly because he's the size of two of them, I think.
Well, let's be honest, he wasn't exactly doing a lot of pressing. Not the strong point of his game.
No.
He was quite happy to let them have the ball. That may actually have been a tactic, I don't know. I'm not sure what.
It was, because Ball dropped back as well on defence. I noticed that he dropped almost a halfway.
Yep, so I think Hooper wasn't exactly heavily involved, in my opinion. But he doesn't need to be, because he scores goals. And he scored the goal that we expected him to do. So, you know, there's no argument. There's no he hasn't done a bad job, because he's done what you wanted him to.
Yeah. I think this is kind of where we get into we basically got caught between a rock and a hard place, where Hooper's his second start, but really his first one in mostly for the whole season, 15, 20 minutes tops. By 60, he's tapped out. He was huffing pretty hard at the end of that first half. So he's running on borrowed time. Ball gets chopped again, and not long after starts clutching at his hip. And I think that was around about the 60th minute as well.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
So basically losing your top two players as an up the formation rather than...
Understand. Yep.
That creates real problems for us. And coming to your point about the combination between Davila and Ball, as soon as Ball goes off, Steinman's game disappears. He can't hit a pass to save himself. Davila's dropped into that Ball slot, but he felt like he had a bit of a niggle. Didn't anyone else kind of feel?
No,
it looked like he was a yard slow.
Not from where I was looking, but I don't have a very good perspective. So
I want to say it's actually I'm largely agreeing with the point I want to make, but I think it's actually a problem further forward. I think it's two guys we've brought on there that are the problem. I think Soterio and Wayne, as a combination, don't give you that same outlet further forward that you have when you've got Ball on the field, for example.
Correct.
And Hooper might not have the same work rate, but he's certainly an outlet that if you find his feet, he can hold a ball up and he can give time for someone else to get into a better position or, you know, that kind of stuff. He's not going to be making good runs. Soterio, you do get some of those runs, but he needs an outlet as well. And Wayne, I mean... there's a lot of good to be said about Wayne, but this wasn't his best game. And I don't think he's that same level of outlet as you have with David Ball and Hooper. And I think it's a big problem when we've got both of those guys off the field. I think Ball was probably intended to stay on. And the problem is that you don't have a fully fit Hooper, because I think if you end up in an injury crisis like that and we've got to drag Ball, normally you'd go, well, Hoops, you've got to play 90. But we know he's not fit enough to play 90. Yeah. He's not fit enough to play 60 at the moment. That's his outside limit. And so we ended up in a position where we had to drag both of those players. In an ideal world, you need at least one of them to stay on the park, because Soterio Hooper, fine. Soterio Ball, fine. But Soterio Wayne just isn't that same outlet up front for guys like Steinman or Davila to try and find to relieve some of that pressure when they are getting into trouble.
Well, you've also missed the fact that we've also made a formation change when Tiakai comes on. So we've gone Christmas tree, which kind of narrows down. You've taken away effectively one massive option. So Steinman can find four players in front of him. But when you go to Christmas tree, and we had to, because we're going to overrun
the thing. We had to do that.
It wasn't the bad decision. It was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But we're taking away that outlet, and your outlets then become Davila, Soterio, and Wayne, and they are it. There's nothing else ahead of you.
Exactly.
Therefore, he's going to struggle to find the pass, or most of the passes are going to be perhaps sideways. And I'm not saying, I actually think Tiatifai did all right when he came on.
Because
he's not a holding midfielder, but he did a decent six job. But when you're playing three sixes, you're giving yourself no chance of having anything further forward.
No, and it's the thing. I don't think any of those guys necessarily had a particularly bad game. I don't think any of them had great games either. But it's the absence of what was on the park earlier that was the big problem rather than anything else. It wasn't that Steinman, you know, lost his mojo. It was that that same outlet he's got used to having just always there wasn't there anymore. There was no one to find.
I think this is the problem with the very structured football education they have in Germany. It's like he if someone plays the way he expects them to, all day he can, and Ball does. Yeah, he can hit that pass to him all day. And there was a couple of them right towards the end where he hit a pass and it went straight to a Mariners player because there was literally no one making the run he was expecting. And it was just like, oh. And it did not look good. Unfortunately, it was not one of Cammy Devlin's better games either.
No, I think
it was a little bit anonymous. I think
there felt like there was an interesting call from Ufi as well to try and hold a 2-1 lead, which is not a thing Phoenix sides are good at. We're terrible at holding a 6-0 lead. So trying to hold a 2-1 against a side that are coming at you pretty hard also meant we were struggling a bit, I think. Admittedly, we couldn't attack in the same way. You know, it had forced a change in formation and, you know, there were different personnel out there. So we couldn't have kept trying to do exactly the same thing. But I think trying to go, let's just sit on the ball and waste a bit of time was the wrong reaction to that. I think he needed to find a better middle ground between those two things.
I think a 4-3-1-2 would have been better, having De Villa as the 10 and playing Wayne as the Terrio and putting it in behind and get them to run in behind because they're both quick, right? Yeah. They're quick players. Yeah. And that would have put enough pressure on the defense. Tell them they don't have to come back. You've got four defenders and three sixes and a 10. You don't need the top two guys to come back and help in that. You should be fine in that situation. Put it in behind, give him a chance. I mean, it's not a tactic that he obviously likes.
No.
Not a tactic we've tried this season. But as a plan C, when plan B has you playing three sixes, it's a good plan C.
Yeah, and I think it was he got put in a very difficult position, Ufi, but I'm not convinced that his decisions in that hard place were the best. But I think it's probably the first time this season I've really disagreed with him tactically. He's done a lot of things that surprised me that then, you know, basically were, you know, genius moves. And this time he seems to have made a slight misstep. I'm not gonna crucify the guy for it. I think he made the wrong decisions, but he's gonna make a few wrong decisions and we still came away with 3 points. So it looked like a dog shit 45 minutes. But it did get the job done, even though I probably didn't deserve to.
Shall we talk about the corner shithousery?
Oh, where do we start?
Go on.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. Yeah.
You guys love taking it into the corner to waste time?
I don't think we took it to the corner enough. I think once it was clear our tactic was to try and waste time, there were a couple of times when the corner was there and you could take it to the corner and you could have wasted a bunch of time.
Yeah.
And instead we put it across. I'm like, well, no, if we're doing this, do it properly. And I don't mind it at all, but if you're going to do it, do it.
Well, my problem was that it only worked once out of about 4 or 5 attempts. It's like we turned the ball over straight away and I was kind of like, well, that's...
Well, the weird times was the times we took it to the corner were probably the worst situations to take it to the corner.
Yeah,
but when it was right there to go, oh, I could cut inside or I could just go out here and we'll waste 30 seconds out here, were not the times we went to the corner. We'd be like, oh, there's three guys already standing in the corner. Let's take it there now. You know?
Also, the worst part was the player that you probably want to waste in the time is Hooper. And he's not on the field. He is the guy, being the unit that he is because he's a large lad. Yeah. He could just hold the guys off and put a foot on the ball and quite easily waste some time. I actually think you are better off recycling possession and passing it between your own players and going all the way back if you have to and then coming back up again and then taking it to the corner.
We weren't doing that well either, though. No. And clearly there was some intent to waste time, but it was like, oh, let's just do it in a kind of half-assed way. That's what bothered me about it. Not that we're doing it. Honestly, 2-1 lead and you're under the pump, waste some time. Hold that lead. I'm okay with that if that's the decision you've made. But do it properly. Don't also try and get forward and just keep giving it away. Like, that's the last thing you should be doing is making a pass straight to a Mariners player.
Mm. Yeah. I think, yeah, Marinovic was sitting at the back kind of like completely unused. I think Teatafai did very well when he did get the ball. He'd basically spread it nice and wide and was at least making the Mariners players track across. I think we needed to use the depth as well as just like going straight into a corner and getting boxed in.
I think there's an element of probably the Kiwis in particular are not used to doing that sort of thing. It's not a thing we see in New Zealand football particularly often. I'm sure guys like Taylor are quite used to that. You know, that'd be fine. He'd be able to do that all day. But some of those other guys just aren't used to it and it felt very unnatural. And I think that was part of the problem.
Yeah. Totally agree, unfortunately. But did get away with it.
Yeah.
Obviously everyone would take the 3 points all day.
Yeah. That second half was horrendous, though. It was horrible watching.
Yeah, if you're coming away from it as a Mariners player or fan or whatever, you'd be disappointed you didn't get anything out of that.
Yeah, I think
gutted.
I think no one would have argued if they pulled a point out of that.
Yeah, and I think first half they would have been feeling we've been, you know, under some pressure, but we're still in this.
Yep. I think they were justified at being level at that time. I think they played a really solid, at that point, a really solid away performance. Where you, when you play away, you're not expecting to dominate possession. No. You're certainly not expecting to dominate territory. The home team tends to be the stronger side. But if you can put a performance in like they did, yep, where you play on the fast break and you definitely have them under pressure, you hit the crossbar, you hit the post, you know, you've made Marinovic make some saves, you'd be pretty gutted not to be level.
Made some very good saves too.
Yeah. My only criticism of them at all would be that they weren't that solid defensively. That was their big thing. We scored two very good goals, but we also cut them open very easily.
I think
we
felt like we could have scored a few more than the two that we got in that first half. But even though we had plenty of chances in the second, I don't think we felt like we were ever going to score in the second.
No, I don't think we.
Well, except when Libby had it. To be honest, when Libby was cutting inside, if the boy could shoot, because he's great at picking out the keeper when he hits it with his right, but if he could shoot, he might have had it one or two, because he was excellent coming back in.
Yeah, even Smithy said that he actually did some quite good things, and that's high praise.
That is high praise.
Mr. Yeah. Smith about Libby.
He is his harshest critic.
Oh, by a long way. Yeah, he does seem to leave it quite late to get forward, which I don't have a problem with. But
don't have a problem with it if it's successful. If he's leaving it too late and he's not successful in getting there, then he needs to work on that. But if he's coming forward late, that's fine if he gets there.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, it always feels like if you're going to commit yourself forward when you're a fullback, leaving it late in the game when you're running at tired players gives you more of an opportunity to basically get the ball forward, and less chance of them breaking behind you.
He is another one who is deceptively quick. He is one of the quickest lads in the team.
Yeah, he is pretty quick. I'm struggling to think of someone that didn't have a good game or didn't have an average to good game.
I felt our midfield was poor. So the Steinman, Devlin didn't play well. They played better when Tiarafai came on to help them, but I thought I didn't think they were having a particularly good game. Second half, no one was playing well. We appeared to get worse when ball came off, but I think that might have been because the change of formation was one that maybe they've done that as their plan B in training, but it certainly didn't look like it was one they were used to playing. No. So if they've changed formation they're not used to, no one's really going to be playing well in that system. I think the biggest issue is that no one's put their hand up, bar maybe Libby and Ball, who's gone off, to say they've had a decent game. Oh, and Marinovic
had a good game.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a few guys there that will need to put their hands up and say, oh, I should have done better. I haven't had a five out of ten here. I've had like a three or a four, and those central midfield is probably that area.
Yeah, I think Steinman is. I thought he was playing well that first half, certainly the first 40-odd minutes, maybe in the first 50. But as soon as ball went off, my God, he couldn't hit anything.
We are 8 games unbeaten, and the last 7 games we have played quite well. So, and we've got good points, we've got good results. We've managed to tough out a good result against a really, really, against a team we should be beating, and when we haven't played well.
Yeah. What phrase would you use to describe that, Cam?
I've just described it how I would describe it. Thanks, Frosty.
Damn it.
If there's a cliche you'd like to say, Frosty, feel free to use it.
I have heard someone use the term win ugly, and I was going to take issue with that because I feel that wasn't so much us winning ugly as Mariners losing pretty.
I don't think we played ugly football. I just don't think we played well.
No, we tried to play pretty, but it was just bad.
We don't play ugly football under Ufi. We actually play really attractive, positive football. We just didn't do it well, and we still managed to tough out.
We got away with it.
Yeah, it wasn't winning ugly by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, I think when your opening goal is 16 passes touching every player in the team, and then it's just, you know, a tap in, you can't call that winning ugly.
No. This is very much why I was going to say issue with it.
But grinding it out is what happened in that second half.
To me, it didn't even feel like that. It felt just like Mariners couldn't do it. They just didn't have the nous, the firepower, the confidence. I think we just got away with it.
Yeah.
If we'd done that the previous week, we'd have lost.
Of the previous 7 weeks.
Yep, we would have lost. Yep. But this is the situation where we've played all the tough teams. Now we've come up against a team that's been struggling this season, admittedly doing better than they have done previously. It's like, I think we may have taken the middle lightly because of how we've been going. I don't think that's going to happen again. I think this week we'll see a different.
I don't even know that it's necessarily that. I think the Mariners are starting, you know, on an upward trajectory form wise. Mm-hmm. They've been looking better than they have. And we've hit them while they're on the up, and they had some belief. You know, you go in at 2-1 at halftime, and it's a bit easier as a coach to talk to that, going, you know, you've been doing a lot better. We're right in this one. You know, if we go out there, we can take some points. And that team talk obviously worked. And on the other side, whatever Ufi said obviously didn't fire the boys up as much. And then you had an early injury in that second half. I think it's about the 55th minute, the ball goes off. And, you know, we just didn't adjust well from there.
Hmm. We should be fair to Mariners. I mean, as much as they've been, to quote Mr. McBreen, dog shit previous years, this year, I mean, they've picked up 9 points. They're not that far off the six anyway.
10, I think. But either way, they
put in some decent performances.
Yeah, they were like we were early in the season, where their performances haven't got the points that they perhaps have warranted. Mm. They played better football. Like earlier season, we were wondering where our goals were coming from, weren't we? We weren't playing poorly, but we certainly didn't look like we were going to score a pile of goals. The change, you know, that changed after four games, but they're in that position now. They just look just in that they need to perhaps they're one defender shy and one striker shy of being a team that's fighting for the playoffs.
I mean, most teams get better with 13 on the field.
Well played, Dave. Well played. If you can have that.
If you're Sydney, you've got an assistant ref and a ref in there as well. So, yeah, come on. That Ryan Grant thing really pisses me off still. We should probably get on to the rest of the league. Mr. Grant, his suspension was lowered to 2 games, the same as Libby. The reasoning was mind-boggling. Because of his
character.
Because of his community service. So basically, I can bobsled someone in the head, but if I go and spend some time at a charity.
I'm going to take small issue with this because the match review panel didn't say that. They didn't say any of those things. It was the Sydney press release that said that.
And so the match. Their appeal, wasn't it?
Well, they wrote a press release after it got reduced and said it's been reduced because of, you know, things like his history and his character and all of that. The match review panel said none of that. They said, we've reviewed the incident. We've decided it's only 2 matches. Right. So all of the things that piss people off about this the most are Sydney talking themselves up.
Yeah.
Which, if the match review panel really did factor in those things, I'd have a problem with it. But I don't think they did. I think Sydney have just come out after the fact and gone, let's say it's been reduced because Ryan Grant's just a bloody good bloke. And
Sydney should
there's
through.
No reason they can't do that. And they did. And it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. But I bet there's a lot of people who like Ryan Grant who went, yeah, that seems good. And that's their fans. That's who they want to market to. And fair enough.
I like Ryan Grant as a player, but he still bobsleded the dude.
Yeah. But a lot of people got very fiery on social media about this, being like, how can you say he's got no history in this area when he has 20 tackles? But the match review panel didn't say any of those things.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Okay, fair enough. Let's crack on the results, Cam.
Okay, so it actually starts at the end of the last round because we potted before that round finished. It was a New Year's Eve game between Central Coast Mariners and Perth Glory, which ended 3-0 to Perth. Goals to Diego Castro, Joel Chianese, and Bruno Fornaroli. That's pretty much an expected result, I think.
At least two of us predicted that one.
Yeah. The next game was Western Sydney Wanderers 1 versus Brisbane Roar 2. So it was a very unexpected victory here for Brisbane away. Goals to Western Sydney was for Mitch Duke, who opened the scoring of the match, levelled up by Scott Neville in the 20th minute, and Brandon Inman got the winner in the 61st minute for Brisbane. Next game, I watched the first half of this and went to bed. Melbourne City 3, Western United 2. It was 3-0 at halftime, which is why I went to bed.
So they were getting absolutely hosed.
So goals were to Jamie McLaren in the 5th minute, Adrian Luna in the 36th minute, and quite possibly my favourite goal of the season thus far, Jamie McLaren in the 44th minute. If you haven't seen Jamie McLaren's second goal from this game, do yourself a favour and go and watch it. You will enjoy it. The second half, Berisha scored in the 75th minute. The red card to Melbourne City for both of these were pens for – I think this was a dubious red card. It was sliding along the ground, and the ball hit his arm. It looked to me like they've obviously done it for a dog so, because they were.
It wasn't a shot, we should add.
It wasn't a cross.
It was a shot.
I'm just repainting the picture, Dave.
So he's passed. I can't remember who had the ball, but they were passing it across to an unmarked Western United player in the box. The City player slid in to try and block the pass, and it's come off his arm. The referee's given a yellow. There were two City defenders coming back between the where the ball was and the attacking Western United player.
But they were behind the attackers.
They were behind the play, but it did look like it would have been feasible for them to at least get to the ball.
Maybe.
Yeah, there was a good chance they could. So I'm not going to say they would, but there was a good chance.
I think you could call it 50-50. I think it would be fair.
So I thought the yellow was probably fair and it should have been a penalty. I was okay with that. But the VAR has upgraded it to a red, and I think that was probably unfair.
Yeah. I don't mind it being a red. I think this is denial of a goal-scoring opportunity. I think a lot of people are assuming the hand was accidental. It looked blooming deliberate to me. It looked about as deliberate as Taylor's one.
I don't think Taylor's was deliberate.
Yeah, me too.
At all.
I mean, he dived.
Yeah. But he dived to block the ball
with his arm out. Have you not watched the time that Taylor's done it previously and got a red card for it? He has form in this area. He is very good at diving with his arm just like that to stop that. But anyway, so Taylor got away with this. I think this is exactly the same. The player has realized he's missed it and he's kept his arm out there to stop it because he knows.
That's fair. You're entitled to try that. Yeah.
And so I think if you assume that this is a deliberate attempt to stop that pass getting through,
that's a red card.
You can call it a denial of a goal scoring opportunity. And this is the thing about dogs, though. It doesn't have to be a guaranteed goal. No. The word is opportunity.
Yes. You got a chance. If you haven't done
in
that,
my opinion,
the next
at least a 50-50 chance that that's going to two strikers who are in.
Yep.
I think the only question is whether or not you believe those two defenders are getting back. I personally don't think they are, but a lot of people seem to think that they would have clearly cut out the ball.
So I don't think they clearly.
I don't think it's clear by any stretch of the imagination.
There was a good opportunity that they could have. So I was happy for a yellow, but you know what? I'm not a referee. So. No.
And that's the thing. I think the VAR has gone, have you realised how clear those players were? Go have a look at it.
Yeah.
And that's what he's looked at and gone, oh, yeah, those players are in more space than I realised. Because I think the ref on the field is watching the ball and what's happening there. He's not necessarily as aware of what's happening behind him.
Yeah.
And probably by the time he looks, you've got two strikers, two attackers and two attackers and two defenders standing very close to each other. And he probably thinks, oh, well, okay, it wasn't a dog, so.
Yeah. That's fair. So Demonte slotted that pen and it finished 3-2 to Melbourne City. Then it was our game, obviously, with Mariners, which was followed by Sydney 2, Adelaide 1. Sydney goals came from Paolo Retre in the 20th and 26th minute. Riley McGree got Adelaide's goal in the 38th minute, and that's how it ended. And the round was finished off with Melbourne victory 4, Newcastle Jets 0. Goals to Robbie Cruz in the 9th, Basher in the 61st, Andrew Naboo in the 64th, and an own goal to Matthew Miller in the 86th minute. And that was the game that cost Ernie his job.
Yeah, to be fair, Newcastle looked awful in this. Really, really bad. I caught the highlights and I think the second half, that Matt Miller own goal, he's clubbed it in at the far post, just smashed it in like a strike, like side-footed, but he's tried to obviously hit it out for a corner and missed by maybe a metre and a half, 2 metres. It's horrible to watch. It's just he wants to dig a hole, crawl into it and kill himself with a spade. It's just, Ernie probably felt that way as well. Not that you'd know it from his expression.
No.
We should probably.
So this is a shame, actually. I really like Ernie.
He's a nice bloke.
But it feels like now perhaps his style of coaching now is done. Like he's at the fully professional level. It may be that he's has not moved enough with the times and needs to change.
I don't know. I mean, I'd like him to get an opportunity with a fully fit team. Because, I mean, the number of injuries that Newcastle have had, a number of pivotal injuries, multiple injuries to visa strikers. And also one or two of your domestic strikers as well. I mean, who did they have at the top for a while?
I don't know who you're going with there.
No, they were playing a defender as a striker for like the first four or five games, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think what Ernie's shown is that he did it once here and he's done it once at Newcastle where he produced a team that performed brilliantly. Newcastle over there got to the grand final, hosted the grand final, lost over here. We were top of the league with four games to go and ended up finishing fourth, I think, and lost our home playoff. I just don't think he can do it consistently. He gets that one thing that works for that one season, but then perhaps relies on it too heavily going forward. People have worked it out and he doesn't have a plan B.
Yeah, I think that might be fair. We should probably mention the re-signings that we've had in the Knicks.
And the new signing as well.
Yeah, true. New signing, Brandon Wilson, who was released mutual agreement from Perth, former Ollie Roos captain, played for them for a couple of years, been through the under-20s as well. Apparently, a lot of Australian people quite rate him. Was in a bit of trouble for his Oliroo antics, along with three other blokes. The less said about that, the better.
I mean, we talked about it reasonably extensively on the pod.
But yeah, now he's in Max Gallows. So
I think if you like, people are going to be talking about this. The media are talking about it. I think it would be remiss of us not to mention it. But I think it's an interesting one because we obviously talked about the story previously. It's. If the official version of events is all that occurred, I don't have too much of a problem with it. He's a young kid. He's copped a punishment. It's, you know, he's missing out on going to the Olympics. That sounds like it's probably deserved for breaching team protocol, but it doesn't mean we need to, you know, crucify the guy going forward. However, I think the concern from some people, and I think it's probably a fair enough one, is the official version of events the whole story? And I think that's a fair question to ask because it wouldn't be the first time some more details, I guess, have been kept from the public eye. And if that's the case here, then there may be some stuff that the Phoenix need to be putting around that. But if the official version and what's public is all that happened, he's copped the punishment and hopefully he learns from it. Yeah. If there's more to it, hopefully Ufi and, you know, Domi and, you know, the staff are across that and have the right protocols in place to ensure that there's no repeat of any such incident.
Yeah, the interest from mine is that he's a defensive midfielder somewhere. We do have a lot of cover at the moment. Yep. Can cover right back as well, but it's kind of very much a secondary role for him, I think.
Well, he's played at right back for Perth, I think, in the A-League before. And Ufi, I assume through his age group stuff with the Australian setup, knows him quite well. I think he's probably very aware of the sort of player he is, and he's obviously played in that position at an A-League level before, so they kind of know what they're getting there a lot. And I think in reality, you look at us at the moment and we need some right back cover. I think if you look at the signing, I would say we're signing for some depth at right back and it just happens he's also a midfielder. I think that's the reality of how that decision's probably gone, because if Tim Payne goes down now, what's our option?
Yep.
You needed some cover there and now we've got it.
Yep. We do still have Walter Scott there.
But I think he's more of a cover for the left, for Libby, to be honest.
He covered for Libby when Libby was suspended.
Yeah,
right. His strength is the left. He can play right, but his strength is the left.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was also Joshua Soterio, 2-year extension. Mm-hmm. There was another
Stephen Taylor got 2-year extension.
And Ruth got 3-year extension, which is huge.
That's massive.
Yep. For a guy that's kind of probably playing for his starting spot, to get a 3-year extension. I didn't realise he's so young. He's 23. He's just turned 24.
He's very young. I think he could probably picked up lower leagues in Europe if he wanted to give it a shot. Obviously, having been born, I think, in Switzerland.
Yeah, he has a Swiss passport.
Exactly. He can get over and do whatever he likes over there. He's not going to have any issues. So I think we're more likely to lose Cammy Devlin to Europe than we are to lose Alex Rufer to Europe. And so signing him down to 3 years, I think he will stay here for that period of time. Whereas I think Cammy Devlin, if he keeps performing like he is more likely to move on. So I think they're covering themselves for the future, to be honest.
Well, and I think there's an element as well now that we have some certainty around our future. Yeah. We can make good business decisions around this sort of stuff. And just because you're signing someone like Rufer for 3 years doesn't mean that 3 years from now you expect them to still be playing for us. It just gives us that option around that. If we still have Devlin around and we've got Rufer and they're all competing for the same position, doesn't mean you can't offload a player. You can, and you might get some transfer fee and all of that. But it makes sense with these guys. If they're keen to be staying, and we certainly are keen to have midfielders, so why not exercise those sorts of options now, lock them in for a while, and, you know, if 2 years from now we're going, oh, actually, we don't want that third-year contract, then so be it.
I think now we're up to 11 players signed for next year.
13,
is it?
Yeah, Brandon Wilson's got an 18-month contract.
Yep.
So, I think we're up to 13. He might have been the 14th, actually.
So I think the only position in terms of a starting 11 you don't really have on the books is another centre-back, is my recollection of it. So don't have for next year.
Tim Payne.
Yeah.
Okay. He signed an extension as well.
Yeah.
So he's here for, I think, another 2 years extension. So you could play Tim Payne and you have a starting 11.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
not too bad either. How long has Marinovic got? Remind me.
I think he's here next year.
He's here next year. And he's got Sale as well.
So it's nice to see going from basically no one to having an 11 that you wouldn't be horribly upset if we had the field.
No, I'd be okay with that, actually. And looking at the guys, you couldn't do the 4-2-2-2 that Ufi wants, but you could certainly play a Christmas tree with those guys and you'd probably do all right.
Yeah. Have you got the list of the next round, Cam?
I sure do. So the round, do you want to talk about our game first?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, okay. So obviously our game is at 4:45 on Saturday. Please note the change in kickoff time. Initially it was coming at 7:15 on Saturday, but it has now been brought forward to 4:45 because of broadcasting rights with ABC. So 4:45 kickoff at the stadium against Western Sydney Wanderers. I think the biggest question around this is David Ball.
Yep.
Yep. And it's a big question.
Yeah. Well, and as the stats people like to point out, we went on the same exact streak last season of undefeated in terms of the like win draw pattern. And it's followed exactly the same pattern this year. And this would be the game we'd be due to lose to follow that same pattern from last season.
Didn't we do 9 in a row?
I believe it was 8.
I thought we did 9 in a row. I certainly remember getting sort of like 20 points from 9 games or something like that. So
quite possibly, but so the pattern, as far as I'm aware from the people who've been talking about it, is an 8-game pattern, with this weekend being the loss to follow the same pattern. So if Baldy's out injured, you'd have to wonder if that does feel very plausible.
Yeah, you got to wonder about the Mariners, the Wanderers too.
Yep.
Because they just keep finding a way to lose. Is this the game that they finally bounce back?
Yeah, they're due a bounce.
Because they're not a bad team.
No, they haven't been playing badly at all. They've been playing really,
but
really
they
well.
They also can't take a trick at the moment. No, so
I mean, when you lose at home to Brisbane,
and not a good Brisbane
have been playing poorly this season. It perhaps doesn't say something about the ability of the players on the pitch. It may say something about the mindset of the squad and how Babel's managing them as people, rather than doing the, you know, maybe the psychological side rather than the actual physical footballing side.
I wonder if maybe there's a bit of pressure playing at home, and maybe it's going to be released when they play away. Because, I mean, the last time they were here, they were not bad. They realistically deserved points, if not all of the points.
Well, and it was months ago we were talking about the pressure on Babel around that they're sounding like there'd been a deadline put on him needing to get some wins. And surely he's back under some pressure again.
Well, no, I mean, if that Brisbane game didn't get rid of him, I think he's safe.
Well, maybe. Or you know, he had some all right results in the middle there. Maybe it bought him some more time. But I would have to say there's, if those rumours were true back 2 months ago or whenever it was, surely there's some pressure on him behind the scenes at the moment, I would have thought.
Hmm. So that's obviously the
Saturday 4:45. Yep. I think we win this one 2-1.
Yep. I'm going to agree with that. Another 2-1.
I'll go 3-1 just to be different. But yeah.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a 1-0. To the Knicks.
Okay, cool. Okay, so the round opens with Newcastle playing at home against Sydney. I'm going to go 4-0 Sydney.
Ooh, you're not going to give them any credit for a new coach bounce?
No, because statistically new coach bounce is not a thing.
Wow, it is in the A-League.
No, it's not in any league. Statistically, it doesn't exist. It feels like it does, but it genuinely doesn't. There is no increase in points with a new manager for anyone.
Hansi Flick says no.
Yeah, I think you're generalising a lot there.
No.
I am going to say that Sydney still win this, but Jets get a goal. Let's go 3-1.
Yeah, this is 3-0 Sydney.
2-0 Sydney.
Cool. Then it's our game on Saturday. That's followed by Brisbane Roar against Melbourne City. I pick City 2-0.
I don't know if they're going to score. I think they'll be too busy sticking their arms up their assholes and turning them into little puppets. This is going to be
that is quite an image.
Slaughter.
Hell of a metaphor.
It is going to be a slaughter. I think it's only going to be 3-0 because they'll just be too busy pissing around.
I'm not following that.
1-1. To be different.
Let's go, Dave.
Sorry, what did you pick?
1-1.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm going to go draw as well. 2-2 though.
Cool. Perth Glory versus Adelaide United.
Oh, this will be a good one.
Yep. You guys can pick first this time.
War of attrition.
Perth 2-1.
Where is it?
Perth.
It is Perth. Yeah, 2-1 Perth.
2-0 Perth.
1-1. Round finishes off. Central Coast Mariners on Sunday host Melbourne Victory.
Oh. Interesting. That's a tough game as well. As much as Victory had a storming win on the weekend, I don't see them playing two in a row that are good. 1-1.
Victory 2-0.
Victory 2-1.
Victory 1-0. And that is a round. Western United have their first bye.
Ooh. So they're sitting, what, about sixth now? Yep. Do you want to give us
fifth? Yeah, so Sydney is miles out in front. 9 points clear, sitting on 31 points after 12 games. City is second, 22 points after 12 games, followed by Perth on 18 points after 11 games, and then us on 18 points after 12 games. Perth have a much better goal difference than us. Western United is in fifth, 1 point behind us on 17 points, but they played 13 games, and they have a negative goal difference, and they're... Like Dave called at the start of the season, they're slipping when the injuries came. So remember we had this conversation, we thought their first 11 was very good, but once they start getting the knocks, they didn't have the depth, and that certainly looks like...
And they've lost a couple of players too, haven't they?
Yes.
McDonald has asked for a
I think he's going somewhere else. Yep.
Potentially Brisbane, but there's also someone else I'm pretty sure that they've has moved on. Connor Chapman?
Yeah, I'm not sure than all the players, I'm sorry.
So the other thing we talked about as well that I think is proven somewhat correct is I said that they've got a bunch of points they don't necessarily deserve. We've definitely seen a few teams who've deserved more points than they've got. I think Wanderers have been in that camp a few times. We were for a while there. I think the Mariners had a few games like that. Western United were very much on the opposite side of that coin. They had a couple wins. They really didn't deserve. They were barely in those games and somehow came away with wins. And we've just seen that correction. So I think the injuries have hit and they've kind of righted themselves from those high flying times that I'm not convinced they actually were playing that well.
Mm. Well, yeah, so I think they may fall down the table quite a bit further yet.
Yep, agreed.
And may struggle to make the top six.
Well, I mean,
they're certainly not playing like a top six team.
No.
You look at Adelaide and Western United, who are below them.
Really, Adelaide?
Them play. Adelaide's been playing some decent football. They've got five wins, six losses, but they haven't been playing poorly. You know what I mean? They've still been picking out quite a few points. They still feel like a team that should slot into the top six compared to what else is there. Western Sydney Wanderers is exactly the same. They feel like they should be higher than they are or could be pushing into the six. They're certainly playing the style of football they're playing. So Adelaide are sitting in sixth. They're on 15 points after 11 games. The Victory are in seventh on 15 points after 12 games, have a worse goal difference than Adelaide. Western Union Sydney are eighth on 14 points after 12 games. Brisbane is a ninth on 12 points after 11 games. Central Coast Mariners in 10th on 10 points after 11 games. And the Newcastle Jets holding up the table on 9 points after 11 games with a horrendous, horrendous goal difference.
What is it, like negative 14 or something?
Minus 14, yeah.
Ouch.
To be fair, they're just balancing out Sydney, who's got an incredibly good goal difference and the only team with it. So, that's the table.
Yeah, so interesting. Still, I mean, you've got to say 9 points for the 11th place team. That's a lot better than it has been previous seasons. Obviously, I mean, I think there's 3 points from that six down to
Perth is on 18 points in third, and the bottom is nine. So you're looking at eight teams separated by 9 points.
Yeah.
Or nine teams separated by 9 points. That's a tight table. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Other than Sydney kind of running away with it, it's been a pretty...
Pretty even.
Yeah, competitive year, to be honest. Yeah. I think most of these games you go into going either side could win this.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. We should probably kick on to the women's game.
Yeah.
Because we have been neglecting it somewhat because...
Our expert's been on holiday.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Ella.
Poorly mapped priorities. Yeah. So only three of the four scheduled games were played last round. The Canberra versus Sydney game was postponed due to air quality concerns. So obviously with...
The fact that most of the crowd are wearing a mask.
And a lot of the country's on fire kind of made it a bit difficult to get a game going. I mean, there's been a few games so far this season where it's been questionable as to whether or not the game should have gone ahead. The Western Sydney Wanderers game round before last, like apparently the ref said to the Wanderers coach, like, you know, we're going ahead with it, but I'd just be a bit concerned about your asthmatic players. So,
what?
Yep.
Cool.
This is kind of the territory that we're getting into at the moment, which is particularly hitting the W League games a bit hard because of kickoff times and that kind of thing. So, it'd be interesting to see over the next few weeks, how that continues to play out because those are some weird decisions and weird calls that are being made. Obviously, the thresholds off the top of my head, I don't know what they are to permit games to be played, but. It's a weird system that you've got when you've got a ref literally saying, the asthmatic players may be struggling.
Yeah. If anyone falls over dead, sorry.
The decision shouldn't be putting commercial interests ahead of player welfare, but we've seen it before in the A-League as well where there were games played.
Yeah, there's been a few games
that
in the
shouldn't
as well.
Have been, just straight up shouldn't have been.
Yeah. So yeah, so that game fortunately did not go ahead between Canberra and Sydney. In Melbourne, Annalie Longo's victory beat the Newcastle Jets 2-1. For the foreseeable future, I suppose that'll be Newcastle Jets coach Craig Dean's last game in charge, because he's obviously being switched up to the A-League team, which...
Go on, don't bite your tongue.
You don't have to. You don't have to bite your tongue on this. Well, maybe you do if you're writing for The Guardian, but...
Yeah, debating whether I'm going to write about that for my piece next week.
But yeah, fair enough. What, if you want to keep your powder dry, then fair enough.
Yeah, I mean...
Can I? Should we just say it's shit?
It's just typical, isn't it? Like, if the roles were reversed and it was a W, you know, just looking at it purely, you know, male team, female team at a club, would you, if the coach of the women's team went, would you see the coach of the men's team stepping in to take over and just kind of keep things going?
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, I just do not think it is a great set of processes. I'm also not surprised.
I'll say it. It feels like it's marginalising the women's game and not taking it seriously in any way, shape or form.
Especially when you're probably... have a minimal coaching staff for the women's team anyway.
Yeah.
And then to take away the head coach, that's not good.
Yeah. And what are they putting in place for the women's team?
I think the assistant coach is kind of, they've said sort of normally, and I think what they'll be banking on for this weekend is obviously it's a doubleheader game for the Jets anyway. So he'll be around. They've said he'll remain the head coach of the W League team, but someone else will be taking charge on game day. What? So
you know,
it's an interesting definition of remaining in charge.
Yeah, I was going to play devil's advocate for a second there and say it maybe shows some esteem in which they're holding the women's game. Yeah. They're passing over the assistant coach in favour of taking the W League coach, going, this is the better coach we've got over here. We'd like them in. But if you're asking them to do a dual role, that's not the case. You need, if you're doing that, you need to be putting a proper system in place for that W League.
Yeah, I mean, it's doing it particularly tough for the Jets as well, because I think they're the only team that's not used any of their import slots. So so for this season, they've very much gone down the road of, you know, we're using, you know, local young talent, building for the future, all that kind of thing. So far, it's been paying off. They have look like a team that, you know, chuck in a couple of internationals, chuck in a couple of Matildas, because they've got one in Gemma Simon, but you know, that's kind of been the difference between them sort of topping out the bottom rather than propping at the top, so to speak. So it just feels, you know, this weekend's going to be unnecessarily tough given that they're playing Adelaide, who are currently bottom, for this weekend's game.
Also doesn't.
It
also doesn't bode well when they're not willing to spend money on players. It's hardly likely that they're going to be willing to spend money on a new coach.
Yeah, exactly. So how that plays out, you know, how the Jets decide to appoint their A-League coach and what that means for the W League, like, obviously that remains to be seen, but the optics of it are very not good. Yeah. So that was Melbourne victory, Newcastle Jets. The Rebecca Stotts, Melbourne City beat Brisbane Roar 2-0, and the bottom of the table clash between Adelaide United and Perth Glory ended in a draw. So that was Adelaide's first point. Perth were lucky to pull that back with a late penalty to equalise. But yeah, it's been an interesting season for Perth this season, with not having Sam Kerr and having really not, you know, in my opinion, sort of many people's opinions, replacing or sort of shown any kind of planning for what life's going to be like without her. You know, it wasn't just her leaving at the end of last season. It was a couple of other big players, and Rachel Hill and Nikki Stanton. So you've kind of taken out a lot of the core of the team. That's not really been replaced. There was always going to be a slide. It's been quite dramatic this season.
Did they know she was going, or she wasn't going to return?
There was rumours for quite a while.
There's been rumours for ages that she, you know, that she would leave the marquee. So obviously she was the W League's first marquee player. That was obviously a season long deal. And there was kind of always talk of IM will, you know, make the offer again post World Cup. But I think... realistically, that was not going to happen. You know, she had a pretty decent World Cup, all things considered, went back to the NWSL straight away and, you know, scoring goals immediately. It was kind of looking at her, the trajectory of her career, Europe had to be the next step. You'd have to be insane not to then, you know, as a club, making those plans of, well, if she's not going to be here, then what does this look like in the future? It kind of speaks to a lot of the issues in the women's game, you know, short-term contracts and that kind of thing, being just kind of the default, which means you can't really plan out much in the future. But there's that, and then there's what's happened, and I think it's poor. Very, very poor.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, not good. Obviously, we should probably look forward to the Handy Prem, just to switch tacks.
Yeah, so the I actually should have noted the Weenix are playing a curtain raiser at Stadium against Southern this weekend. I think kickoff is at 1:45 on Saturday. Yep. So I know most people won't be getting down to the stadium at 1:45 and spending a good 6 hours sitting there, 5 hours at least.
It'll be televised though, so you can catch it at the pub if you're drinking before the Phoenix.
My suggestion would be heading down to the bench here for 1:45 if you don't feel like sitting in the stadium, and
maybe catch the second half.
Yeah, have a couple of beers, have a support Boise and the boys, and have a chat with the Fever guys, and then head on to the main game. I'll be at the stadium enjoying myself, so watch out for me.
They're playing Southern too. who, we, as we kind of mentioned, I think it might have been off mic before, had their point docking upheld, which, yes, I've already gone on record saying I'm not a fan. That's unfortunate for them. It's a full round of Handy Prem, isn't it? So we should be kicking off with...
Sure do. So the Wenix game kicks off first. That's followed by Waitakere United versus Auckland City. And Canterbury United then host Hamilton Wanderers on Sunday. Tasman United host Eastern Suburbs on Sunday. And Team Wellington host Hawke's Bay United on Sunday, 2 p.m. at David Farrington Park. So if you want, there's three games of football on you could watch this weekend within in Wellington. And you should theoretically be able to get to all of them pretty comfortably. So,
well, seeing as one set is a double header, you'd kind of hope so.
Yeah, you would. But get along on Sunday as well. Team Wellington need the support. They're playing good football. They're just behind Auckland City, comfortably second place. I think they have the ability to pass Auckland City and beat them this season. I certainly think they're better than the Hawke's Bay, Easts and Waitak, who are the teams chasing them, that's for sure.
That's a big call on passing Auckland City, because how many points have they shipped all year?
Auckland City are on 18 points off 8 games. We're on 15 points off 8 games. We've had one loss, they've had zero. That's the difference. They've had one win to our loss. So you turn around that result, we've got a good chance of passing them, to be honest. Their goal difference is 13, ours is 10. We've scored more goals than them. So I honestly, I think this year Auckland have come back to the mean quite a lot. Previous seasons they'd have played 8 and 1-8. Maybe lost the one against us, but generally played 8 and 1-8, and that'd be 9 points clear of the league and done. But, doesn't look like it this year.
So, interesting. I think it'll be the Wenix will be interesting as well. They've had some good results, despite it being the first year in their two-year cycle.
Yeah, I think some of those results have coincided with having some players drop. So they've had...
One of them was... but I think there's only been a major drop once, hasn't there?
Well, no, because there was the game against Team Wellington as well. They had players drop for Team Wellington game. They had players drop down for the Eastern Suburbs game. They've had a win and 4 draws, which is unusual for them. So sitting on 7 points, not bottom of the table. They've scored double the goals that Tasman United have, which is why they are ahead of Tasman United on the table, are both on 7 points. So, yeah, no, I actually think at least 4 of those points probably come from having some senior pros dropping down. But that's why the team's there. They're there to give the guys that aren't getting minutes in their legs. So if you want Hooper to get match fit, chuck them in there and give them some minutes. That makes sense to me. So, yeah.
Yeah. Any Nostradamus points for the game? Do we think Hooper's starting this one as well?
No, Hooper's starting for the first team.
Yeah, I'm going back to the first team, mate.
We've already had a chat about the first team game.
I know, but we haven't done any predictions for the first team game.
Yes, we did. We chatted about where the ball was going to come and what our score predictions were.
Yes, Hooper's going to start.
Thanks, Dave.
I think
60 minutes again, I reckon.
Yeah.
If ball is fit, ball will start alongside Hooper. If not, it'll be Hooper and Soterio.
And formation without ball?
It's 4-2-2-2.
Yeah. You reckon?
4-2-2-2 until otherwise becomes necessary.
You know, dip your oar in, Ella. Have a guess.
I'm just trying to think of these central midfielders and how we're going to cram them all in. But other than that,
I think.
Do we think Wilson gets any minutes?
No, I think we're most likely to see Brandon Wilson play for the reserves this weekend, just to see what he can do and get some minutes in his legs, because he hasn't been playing for the Perth team. Exactly the same scenario. If Rufus fit, Rufus will come onto the bench. I don't think you drop Cam Devlin after being actually, that's something we should have talked about.
Running the
awards. The Phoenix won best youth player for the month in December with Reno Piscopo. They won the coach of the month for Ufuk Talay.
Piscopo.
Yeah, and they won the player. They were first and second in the player of the month, with Davila getting second and Devlin getting first. So, it surprises me that Devlin didn't win the young player as well as the player of the month. But
Does seem a bit strange.
Was he nominated and were they both fan voted?
So, no, they weren't both fan voted. The youth player is not a fan vote, but the player of the month is a fan vote. I've never seen that happen to our club, to win all those monthly awards for the team. That's phenomenal. So, theoretically, we should have got first and second in the youth player if they did say first and second in the youth player, because Devlin would have been up there too. So.
Yep. Golden times. So get along to the stadium, afternoon or early evening game, so it should be nice and warm.
Lovely, man. I loved the last 4:45 kickoff. It was absolutely brilliant. I really hope next season we get more of them.
Yeah, certainly it would be very good for both viewing, hopefully, in Australia, but also good for actually getting out and about.
I prefer it on a Sunday. Personally, I prefer it on a Sunday, but no. Yeah, brilliant.
No.
Oh, no. Sunday's not good. Bigger crowds for a 4:35 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday. It'd be great.
Bigger than a late crowd, but Saturday crowds have to be what we target.
The problem is, do we want to have this conversation or should we do it after?
No, we can have this conversation now. Go on. Cam's backing away.
Do it for the patrons.
Okay. So you heard it here. Cam's cutting you off. Yeah. Any of you that
there is really controversial opinions on crowds.
So we'll leave it there. Hopefully we'll see you at the game 4:45 kickoff at the stadium, newly named Sky Stadium, now that it's official.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even though it was still there a month ago.
Actually, I have a bone to pick with you before you go.
Why?
Only person I had in my entire photo of that zone who hadn't shirts off.
Never shirts.
I know. I'm calling.
He doesn't
you out
take it off
now.
In the shower, mate.
Yeah, I know. I know why he doesn't shirts off as well. But yeah. Calling you out on it right now, you should be shirts offing when we're leading. If you're going to stand in the middle of the zone, you've got to shirts off.
Well, I'd happily stand on. I'd happily sit on halfway, but you bastards won't let me. Okay. Goodbye. See you at the game.
Ugly brings you.
You got there as well.